Welcome, Munkit. Finally, we have time for this.
Thank you.
Very short. We did research during summer 2023, and we also had a presentation about this at the Global Vapor Conference during the autumn. And then we've tried to find a time to have this podcast even since then. Now we're in February 2024. So you are a very busy guy, unfortunately, because of things that's happened in the world. And I'm a little bit busy as well.
Yeah, you are. You are.
but so first,
we both. Okay, but I'm so glad that eventually we have the opportunity to have this podcast, which I believe that it is important to put lights on very important issues between our both countries, cultures, and societies.
Yes, I agree with you, and that is basically where we met. But or we met before because we are both members of both Vapor and Gallup International, so we have met on several occasions before. Could you just tell me a little bit about yourself and your company? Why not just start here if they are not familiar with you and your company?
Okay. Well, the entire story started on 2003, after the invasion of my country, Iraq, by the U.S. forces and the coalition at that time. And I think those who lives my age, and they remember very, very well the events at that time. And before that, before 2003, I was a professor in Baghdad University. And at the same time, I was an officer in the old Iraqi army. I was a general in the old Iraqi army. So after 2003, I realized the importance of doing polling in Iraq to understand my people, opinions, feelings towards the invasion. There were a lot of contradicted point of views regarding the that invasion. Those who thought that this will bring democracy, prosperity, good hopes for not for Iraq only, but for the entire region, which will be an oasis of democracy. And there were another views which saw it as an occupation, which is not different than any other occupation, and all what it will do is bringing more miserable life to especially to average people, to ordinary people, and to the region. And I think after 20 or 21 years of that invasion, everyone knows now what that invasion brought to Iraq and the region. So my start began at that time. I was the first ever Iraqi researcher who did a poll in Iraq during Saddam regime. At that time, polling was prohibited. So I was able to do the first ever poll. And since that time, I developed my career. I retired from the university, retired from the army, and put all my efforts and my colleagues, friends' efforts to establish this company, which became one of the biggest in the Middle East right now, doing thousands of public opinion surveys, focus groups, different opinion research, not only in Iraq, mainly in Iraq, but we also work in different countries in the region, started from Morocco to Iraq. So, and right now, as you said, we are both in the same organization, Gallup International. We are both in the World Association of Public Opinion Research. We are now here trying to make life better by providing better understanding of our people, opinions, feelings, what they like, what they dislike. Hopefully, because as you know, democracy is about ruling people according to their wishes, to their hopes, not to the leaders' hopes and wishes.
Yes, yes, that is correct. And I think the first time we met a couple of years ago, I think one thing that we both saw that was so important was the reliability of the research as well, to make sure that it really works. Both you and I have also done research with prestigious universities, and I know we both feel very strongly that you need to rely that the research are not just numbers but reliable facts. And then both you and I talk too much and want to explain why it is the way it is, which is really important because the numbers are just numbers, but they have to be facts. And I think that is something that I feel is often forgotten right now in a global perspective. But I'm also really happy to see that it's not just me up in Sweden making noise. We all need to trust the research we have done.
As you know, there is a wide say in I think everywhere in the world that numbers are talkable. They talk about themselves. For me, numbers are talkable in a certain language, and to be understood by everyone, it needs to be translated to others' language. That's important. Maybe me and you and those who are professional will understand what does it mean that the support for this party is 50%, not 30% or 70%. But this is a number that we both as professional can make or leverage it and put more value added to it by explaining why it was 50, not 30, not 40.
Yes.
This is the most important thing in our job. And this is why you need professionals to do the job and to translate these numbers in the right language to the average people and to the specialists.
Yeah, that is a very good point. And I realized that also, and I think I've been doing this for more than 10 years now in my current position, and I generally know what the results will be more or less before we do the research, because you see the trends and this, you see what's happening in society, which means that you get very good at finding the topics that really needs to be researched. You don't need to research things that you know from experience by doing thousands of research projects. Novus, as well as you, we do almost 1,000 research projects a year. So it's so much data that we have that gives you like a feel for the voice of the people even before we do it. But that you cannot get without experience.
Absolutely.
And being a little bit weird.
Yeah, and this is the difference between the scientific approach, scientific methodology, and non-scientific methodology. Non-scientific methodology or approach based on opinion, perceptions that everyone can have it, but you need to prove it. You need to support it by evidence. Science based on evidence. Yes. This is the right way. This is what we do. It's not enough to understand the general trend, or you can say that, well, I know that, for instance, Swedish people are non-religious. how far they are not religious. It's not enough to say that Iraqis are very religious. Okay, but how far is, how deep, and what is the reflection of that? This is the important thing, and this cannot be interpreted in the right way without a real scientific approach supported by evidence.
Yes, yes, and a lot of professional experience that actually takes years to build. And I also realized, because that is also where we as commercial research industry, where we also of course work with the scientists, and there is the social scientists or what do you want to call them in universities have a big difference, because maybe they can do one project a year and try to add everything there and not only miss the details that it, a lot will happen during your year but also that you cannot build this entire cloud of information around the people and maybe also the local culture, which we soon will go into, I think, because that is also one thing that I think Gallup has like a unique position compared to so many other organizations is Gallup is composed by people like you and me who actually understand the local culture. Yeah. And not just this is a global research. And the big international firms, they have a lot of good going for them. But I think what they tend to miss first is the local knowledge of how you should do the correct research in that that country, because everyone has their challenge. And the second is understanding the cultural dimensions behind the research. Maybe we should talk about the research we did during the summer, because when the Swedish embassy was stormed in Iraq, I started wondering what was going on in Iraq, because of course you can wonder about every country, but it became very, very clear for me that these images about actually the Swedish embassy ambassador losing control over his own territory, more or less, in Iraq, I realized that I know you. So we contacted during the summer and had a discussion. And also, you did bring up the issue that there was a common conception that the Swedish state was taking children away from Muslim families, which has been one of the most effective disinformation campaign ever conducted against Sweden. So what we did was basically looking at the different views of Swedish and Iraqi people from a culture perspective, religious perspective, but also some topics like burning the Quran, which was a huge issue. Apparently, he has just disappeared from everywhere. Suddenly, it's not an issue anymore. I don't know where he gone. He's gone.
Yeah.
But he was probably finished with his task. That is my conclusion. Because they said that
he has been deported from Sweden. I'm not sure that happened, but that's what we heard.
Yes, and I think I would have known that, because that would have been a big news topic in Sweden, because we are having a hard time deporting people because of the national law. So you cannot just throw people out. And I really think the journalists would have picked up. But since we have a free movement in Europe and this wasn't the first country he entered, it may very well that he is free to leave. So, but I don't know. I just realized this the other day. Sorry, I lost my core point of thought, but it's just there's so many weird things about the relationships between Iraq and Sweden that came up during when we started talking, and Sweden suddenly became this big puzzle in a global game connected to NATO application most primarily, I think, but also the relationship between Iran and Sweden. So not directly Iraq, because it has a really complicated story right now, and it's not a very good one. But what we did, which was, I'm really glad you did the same, because your part was more extensive than mine. For me, I can do an online probability research. It takes a couple of weeks. The internet penetration is so good, we really can do probability or population estimation with digital methods. But for you, you really need to do a traditional face-to-face research. Mm-hmm. Maybe short about the method, just if there are more research nerds than that, like you and me.
Yeah. Well, as you said, in Iraq, the current situation will not allow you to use all methodologies that you want to use in collecting data from the field or from people. As you say, that you in Sweden in a much better position to collect data via a panel of online users, while in Iraq, yes, we have a good penetration rate for internet, but the issue is not technology. We have that technology, and the penetration rate of internet in Iraq right now is around 90%, which is very good to do research. But the main topic here that we lack is the trust issue, especially when it comes to sensitive questions like asking religious issues, asking something about culture, about politics, which are sensitive. In an unstable country like Iraq, in a country which full of security issues, alarms, alerts, and people feel afraid for their lives, their kids' lives, etc. So they will not answer sensitive questions unless they trust you. That's why we need to use face-to-face interviews done by professional interviewers who knows how to professional interviewers who knows and train on how to do these interviews. They have been trained to interact with people. They are from the same localities, so people know them, trust them. This is why we go to face-to-face interviews. And this is how we did that poll about the Swedish incident, the burning of Quran in Sweden by that guy. And by the way, congratulations for being a member in the NATO. So finally, you have been approved to be in NATO. And I think that was just part of the big picture behind it. Anyhow, yes. So the methodology that we used in this was CAPI, what we call it CAPI, computer assisted
personal
interview, and I think the results was so talkable, and it's talk about what are the gaps that we need to fill. And I think it is an example, a very, very good example to the misunderstanding between both Mediterranean sides, the European culture, societies, and Sweden was part of, an example of that. And those who lives in the south, and Iraq was a good example of it, to the degree that in Brussels, as I've told you, I will present this data to the European Commission in Brussels in a conference that will be held by the end of this month, and talked about bridging the gaps between the south and the north of Mediterranean.
Yeah, that is really something. And just one note, we're still waiting for Hungary to okay our application. So it's
at least Hungary, they don't have Quran to be banned. No,
exactly. They will find some other excuses. So apparently they want our Swedish Prime Minister to go there and shake his hand. It's like there's some countries here who are focused on the wrong issues. But it's part of a bigger game. And that is what we all know. It has nothing to do. Burning the Quran is a very serious thing. It's nothing to be laughed about, of course. But this was just part of a bigger game, which is really scary. And that is also what there is. I could just some short recap about the research, because we also saw that there is a very strong culture connection in Iraq. 90% in Iraq think their culture is better than others.
Superior,
yes. Yeah. And in Sweden, it's 27%. Because yeah. Sweden is we are extreme in a weird way, because we're extreme in being middle. I can't find this. In Sweden, we have one word that's lagom, but it doesn't exist anywhere, which also really interesting, because it's just exactly in the middle. Not too hot, not too cold, it's lagom. That is where we are the most extreme. We're extreme in not being extreme. and we see that here, because it's the difference here. You have a very strong culture connection in Iraq, clashing with Sweden, was a very low culture connection. But we also see the same in religious connections. Similar results there. Iraq, very strong religious connection to Islam. In Sweden, we have a Christian tradition, but we don't have a religious connection anymore. But but most like the US and most other countries, we have a cultural connection that is based on a religion. But the actual religious connection is very, very weak, but it's still there. So we base our entire world around the Christian values, but we don't believe in God.
Around 90% of Iraqis, they think that their culture is superior to others, while in comparison with Sweden, the 27% of Swedish people think that their culture is superior. When it comes to religiosity, we have almost the same number. Around more than 90% of Iraqis think of themselves as very religious or religious people, while less than a quarter of Swedish people think that they are religious and they are more lean toward the secularity. And when it comes to the importance of the state in comparison with religion, we have almost the same difference. While the vast majorities of Iraqis think that their religion is much more important than the state, in Sweden, it's the totally opposite way. The vast majority think that the state is much more important to religion. So if there are differences that should be counted and should be deal with it when you try to understand what happened during burning Quran and why this outrage of Iraqis behind this incident.
Yes, that is really an important aspect, and also when we then add that there are international actors that are neither from Sweden or directly connected to Iraq, but that take advantage of this situation to destabilize the global power struggle, basically. We have a war in Ukraine. That's one part of it. And so Sweden and Iraq actually became two unwilling actors in a global power struggle. And so which we can
and,
also
and
see.
And by the way, this is still the same story happening right now.
Yes.
Right now in Iraq, there is a big struggle between U.S. And Iran, and every single country try to use these tools, which is religiosity, culture, different issue, trying to use it because culture in Iraq is so tight to the degree that the people will not allow or tolerate any deviance, any out of book story that might affect them. So it's the same play every taking place time after time when these big players they have something to do, and so they use these tools to affect people mentality and put pressures on the politicians and on the political side.
Yeah, and that is something that is so obvious, because I think actually George Gallup he said that people who understand each other, if you see the voice of the people, no one would want war, something in that to that extent, and I think that is what both you and I see as well. And I see it on a local perspective, and I see it on a global perspective. If you know someone from another country, unless they try to really hurt you, you have nothing against them.
Yeah. One thing that I learned from my more than 20 years service in the army, and I went through wars, participated in it. One of the things that I learned is to win a war, the best way to win wars is to avoid wars.
Yeah.
So this is the right way. And to avoid wars, you need to understand others.
Yes.
If you don't understand others, because there is a historical U.S. leader, I'm not sure who is that leader, the name, but he said that war is the best way to impose politeness on a total society. So what does that mean? Is that you impose your culture, your values, your thinking on another society, different society, and if they will not obey, or if they do not go with your culture, with your values, with your interests, then you invade them. There are two approaches.
Yes, and I think there lies also the core of this problem in many ways, because looking at the history of Muslims in the Western world, and this is a complicated issue, because what is really democracy? And if we leave that because it is this too complicated issue, to be honest. But what has happened in many countries, and I think Iraq is one of them, but also Afghanistan and so many other countries, is that the Western view of an open society is being forced into a historical context or over another culture, which is already evolving, because when you start forcing something else and removing the history and the difference here, how trust is being perceived, because the trust is central in the Western society, but also in a Muslim society, but it's in a different way. It's more, I think, in a Muslim way, it's more person to person, but in like the historical Christian way, it's more authoritarian. Actually, It sounds mm-hmm. weird, but it was the church was imposing on the people, and you had to trust the church. So actually, and using that view, but replacing the church with democracy, you start imposing. It feels like you are throwing away a Muslim history, which is of course very personal to you because you've grown up. I not mean you personally, but everyone living there, with a new type of viewing of the world, where you have to trust the government more. And that was definitely a big problem in Afghanistan. I'm pretty sure it is one of the key problems also in Iraq. Because you come in and say, our way is the best way. You might tolerate it. You mentioned it at the beginning. As one view of this, okay, it will bring prosperity. It will bring all these good things. Mm-hmm. But when it fails to deliver on the good things, and it only forces you to lose your history, more or less, mm-hmm. because that's the wrong history you're not allowed to have. That is what it feels like. And you take the worst examples from religious history and use it against you, and not look at the positive sides, because we are all humans. We don't want to hurt each other. As a baseline, there are crazy people everywhere. And we have so many examples when religion is being misused to create violence and death on mm-hmm. on all sides of the world. But I think here is some of the core issues right now that really needs to be addressed a lot more, and that you and I see in our research. Mm-hmm. This big mm-hmm. crash between two, if you look at the people's level, no one wants to hurt anyone else, but they feel that they are being attacked.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Look, for the last 5 years of my research, I have devoted much of my research with my colleague from Stanford University, the professor... Michel Gelvand. We devoted most of our research to understand people culture. Religious is just part,
yes,
though it is very important part of culture, but it is just one part of the culture. The thing that the West or many countries does not understand, that our societies are collective societies, group societies. Mm. The group is so important, is much more important than the individual. Yeah. So, and this is how the socialization process go in our side. When you begin to understand what's going on in your world when you are a child, and you start to understand what's the first thing that your parents will tell you is how to respect culture, is how to respect others, is how not to violate the norms of the people. So we raised up with that strong feeling of the importance of the group and of the culture itself. So when you threat that, it is a serious threat to all members, because for them, maybe it will not be perceived as a personal issues done by a person, a lunatic person, etc. No, it will be perceived as a direct threat to the entire culture, and then to the entire society, and then to the collective people. Mm. That's the thing that we need to understand. There are differences that we need to understand. So while for you and for most Sweden, that was a personal issue done by someone. The culture here does not understand that. They think that as they are in their culture perceive a personal act as a collective act, there in Sweden, that personal act is an act which is supported by the entire society, which is supported by authorities. Yes. In your societies, authorities and the state is more important. Mm. In our society, culture is more important. Mm. These are the things that we need to understand mm. and to bridge the gap between both understandings. Mm.
Yes, and I think that there's actually two things that I realize. First, one difference is between the Swedish and the US culture, because the US culture is based on an individual, on your own, making your own way into a new country. You are basically there. You make your own made man or woman. But in Sweden, actually, we have also very strong collective focus. But we also are very, very focused on not offending anyone, which may sound weird now. But what's happening is that you are so strong in your position to not be offended as an individual mm. that it gets short-circuited when someone is burning the Quran. Because then we have this like freedom thing. you are free to do whatever you want, and from a government perspective, you were so afraid to actually offend someone's beliefs and religions that you could not say that this was bad. But the Swedes thought it was horrible. The Swedes really wanted to change the laws to stop this from happening. They even wanted to limit the holy thing in Sweden, that is freedom of speech, to stop these things from being used. So we had a quick shift in the public view where we did not could not cope with this from a collective perspective. Although I think the government could and should have acted completely different here, and yeah, realized well, you had a global. Audience, you could not focus on the Swedish audience here, and that was really bad. But also the big difference between like a Swedish and an American view on individuality. So there's so many levels here that I'm sorry this yeah, may not yeah. make sense. But yeah.
you know what make me feel good is that we learn from our failures much more than we learn from our success.
Yes.
And this incident with all failures surrounded it, I think it teached the Swedish people and government some very important lessons. And from my side, unfortunately, I cannot rely on my government or my statement to understand it, because I know that they are out of radar, totally out of radar. But for us as a researcher, as researchers, I think it also teached us a good lesson on how to understand other and how to focus more on the grassroots of the problems and not on the symptoms that appear on that occasion. So I think it was good to that make me feel much better that we understood a very good lesson from that incident.
Yes, I agree with you. And although it was from like one perspective, horrible results, because it showed how big the problems are, it also showed that you have to have different tactics. And I think both you and I, to as much as we have been able to, has been trying to inform the responsible parties in governments, because this is really vital knowledge that we just open the door to with our Iraqi Swedish research. Because it's definitely not just limited to Iraq. It's definitely not just limited to Sweden. This is, this is, as you also mentioned, like the conflict between the Muslim society and the, basically the Christian society. Although the religion is not the key issue, but the culture that is connected to living in a historically religious society based on either Muslim or Christian rules, basically.
Yeah, it affect all facts.
Yes, and that is something we really need to take into account, and I think also one thing that Europe or maybe Europe and US really need to understand is that you cannot say to someone else that your view is better, especially when you go into someone else's home or house or country. Then you will fail because you will make, you like the term tight, and I just realized that this will make a society even tighter because it's being under pressure.
Yeah, it will put more pressures on the society. It's so important to understand that there is no good or bad culture. There is a culture, and that culture developed and emerged and developed through a historical process, which enforce a certain society to react to the environmental issues in a certain way. So the Muslim cultures, the Arab cultures, the Swedish, the European cultures, the Christian cultures, all of it developed through a very long historical process that made it like this. That does not mean that this is superior than other, but it means that this culture is more convenient to the current Swedish environment or circumstances than the and the Iraqi culture is more convenient to the current circumstances. So there is no superiority. All people are the same. All cultures are the same. We just need to understand each other and to decide internally what is good and what is bad. This lesson that the Swedish learned, I'm sure that it will be reflected in certain or different ways, like laws, like media, like other issues. And it's also will be reflected in the Iraqi society. So let the Swedish society decide what is better, and let the Iraqi society decide which is better, and don't impose each other values, standards, norms.
Yes,
this is the wrong way.
Yes, you're completely right. And one thing that the research showed, that suddenly Sweden for some time took US place in it looked like we were imposing on Iraq how to live, which we never were, but it was very convenient to create that image. But one thing I just realized also is that cultures evolve. And with a more economic and with more security, you as people can evolve. But this the worse you feel, the more fear that is ruling you or insecurity, you will go backwards.
Absolutely.
And you will go back to the Stone Age, basically, which is happening with external pressure in the wrong way. You can support things. You can have a positive reinforcement. But a violent pressure or threat of violence, and that is what we're seeing so many places right now, that is really worrying me from a global perspective, that the external pressure is being with threat or actual violence, actual deaths, which will never make a culture evolve because you need security. And if you want equal value for every individual in the world, you need to increase security. And that is the most important thing that the governments of the world actually should focus on right now. And I think our view is to show that these are still real people. There's nothing evil in being born in one country or the other, or one religion in another. Mm-hmm. But it's this dehumanizing thing that has been so easy to use from strong politicians who want to look strong, or media who's not taking the responsibility of giving a good view of how the world is actually focusing. They focus on the war, crime, threat, and fear. That is making every culture actually go backwards in the evolution. And that is, I just realized that right now. I think that is basically the core issue right now. We're not being allowed to evolve as human in our own culture, basically.
You are from the same background and culture of Maslow. You know Maslow.
Yes.
Yeah, and so according to Maslow, the security needs are the most important, are the basic needs.
Yeah.
So without feeling secure, human being will react it in many different and violent way.
Mm. Yes.
And you cannot develop cultures without feeling secure.
Yes. And I think maybe that should be our final words, because I realize we've talked for about 40 minutes right now. And this was so interesting. And it turned out in a completely different way than I thought beforehand. But that was a good thing, because I really like these dimensions.
I like it.
I don't really like talking about percentage points left or right, because these are the stories. We are using the data and we're interpreted to actually tell what it really means.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.